I'm Christine Dean, and this is Live from Studio A. And joining us is a guy who's been here before, but he was here as a sideman. I don't think we even gave him a microphone that time. So, Ben, and now it's the Ben Cosgrove Show. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you.
Oh, except now I shut your microphone off, so. There we go.
I can take a hint.
Okay, there we go. All right, welcome, Ben. Let me try that again.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. It's great to be back here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here. You've been here before playing with local band Saint anyway.
Yeah, it was much more crowded in here that time.
A little bit more, yep. They've got a few people in their band. And you tour with them once in a while.
Pretty frequent. They're definitely my closest collaborators. They're just really great guys, and we both kind of travel widely enough that we are able to kind of synchronize our touring schedules to... It's a good break for me from the solitude of touring alone. So it's.
And you're originally from New England, and you're based in Massachusetts now, right?
I am.
And that's where you know those guys from, right?
Yeah, weirdly. Two of those guys, Jamie and Tony, lived in Boston for a year after they graduated from school. And Dane, the bass player, was still out here in Minnesota. So they needed a bass player, and somehow we got set up with each other, and I played bass for them for a year, weirdly. And then when they moved back out here, that was around the time I started touring as a keyboardist. And so we would just arrange to kind of align our schedule so that we could play as many shows together as we could.
Nice. And you are, man, I hardly know where to begin with you, Ben, because you are a very accomplished musician. And
thank you.
You do a lot of different things, and you're involved in some interesting projects. Let's talk.
I'm a pretty weird guy.
Oh, really? Okay. I call it interesting, personally.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate that.
But now, is this a current thing that you're a Signet Artist in Residence Fellow at Harvard?
I am, yeah.
What does that mean?
That's a fantastic, that's a very, very good question. It's cool. It's a fellowship at the university. It's a the Signet is this sort of organization on campus that sort of exists. It was founded, you know, because it was Harvard, you know, 150 years ago or something, in order to be a space for kind of artistically inclined undergrads and professors and grad students, like people from all over the university, to kind of have a place to talk about music and art and writing and this kind of stuff. And they host an artist in residence each year. And before me, it was a writer, and before that, it was a visual artist. And we're supposed to be there to kind of be, you know, doing, like, making our art, but being very kind of obvious about how it's happening and keeping them all posted. And, like, I used that opportunity to make this CD that you have. And I would send, you know, updates and where the drafts were. And whenever I would play locally, I'd tell them all about it. But I get a lot of undergrads come to me and ask about how to, you know, book shows of their own or, like, pitch essays to magazines and stuff like that. So it's, I think they like having someone there who can be a kind of career counselor for unorthodox careers like this one. That's been a really, really amazing opportunity for me. It's a free apartment in a really cool place, and I have been really spoiled. It's going to be really tough when I have to move out.
Well, and it seems like a nice honor to be asked to do that.
Looks good in a resume. So. If only I ever gave anybody my resume.
I was going to say, you're a musician. You don't need a resume.
I know. It's a real shame.
Now, let's just briefly mention this album, just so we can kind of talk about what it's all about. It's called Field Studies, and is it your ninth album?
Oh, I would say we can call it my fourth.
Fourth. Wait, all right.
Yeah,
okay.
It's my fourth album.
Okay. And solo album. You also have a folk group that you're part of. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. Actually, that's with Jamie from Saint Anyway.
Okay.
So it's the two of
and
us.
It's a duo.
It's kind of a side project of ours called 90 Mile Portage.
Okay.
And it began as sort of as an experiment. He would record himself singing and playing guitar and would send me those basic tracks, and I would write arrangements for them. And it was really a ton of fun for both of us. And so now we play shows pretty occasionally, mostly around Boston. But I think we did one in Duluth last year, actually.
So. Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to keep our eyes open to see if you guys come back. But so, you have some other, and you tour with other bands, Saint Anyway, and some other projects. But your own music, and you are a multi-instrumentalist, but your first instrument was the piano, is that right?
Yep.
And that's kind of the focus of this album, would you say?
Oh, I would say so. It's definitely my favorite of the instruments I know how to play.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of get away with more in a piano than...
Okay. And the whole concept, why don't you mention the concept behind this album?
Oh, Field Studies. Well, Field Studies and the album I made before it were both kind of opportunities for me to indulge a big interest I have in geography and landscape. And one of the best things I found about being a traveling musician is that I get this excuse to kind of go to all these crazy places that I would never get to travel through otherwise. Like, I've been through all 50 states because of this now. It's really, really, I'm a big geography nerd, so it's lots of fun. And I've searched for a lot of years to kind of find a way to tie it into my music in a way that makes it, you know, all this movement seem relevant. And I, this album is 13 songs, and each song is a representation of a particular landscape somewhere in North America, like a reaction to how, you know, that place made me feel. The idea being that I think you feel, I think music and landscapes affect us in very similarly, you know, inarticulable, abstract ways. Like when you are in the bottom of a canyon, there's something that's going on for you that feels different from when you're at the top of a skyscraper or, you know, on the side of a mountain or like looking at the ocean, something like that. I thought it would be a cool experiment to try to make a bunch of music where you were kind of deploying different musical tricks to elicit similar reactions. So I don't know how successful it's been, but it was fun to work on.
Okay. Well, why don't we hear a song now? Are you going to do one from the album?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we'll come and talk about that some more because it's just such an interesting concept to
me. Thank you.
So what do you want to start with?
This is called Montreal Song. This is the second song in the album. Thank you.
Ben Cosgrove live from Studio A, and that was Montreal from his Field Studies album. So the album, you know, you were just talking about its places and how they've, what music they inspire from you. So did that make you more aware? Because I think normally you when you were describing, you know, every place makes you feel a little bit different, but I don't think people are normally aware of that. Oh, I turned your microphone off again. See how I am?
That's right. I know. Yeah, no, I think you hit on exactly the thing. I think this was a way for me to kind of feel useful as a musician. I think that if you try to foster a greater awareness of the places you're in, you might be better inclined to appreciate them or take care of them. Or I think there's a lot to be said for having a really strong sense of place and attachment to what is around you and an understanding of how it's affecting you.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to assume that one was inspired by Montreal.
Yeah, that one's pretty easy.
So how does that happen? How do you approach that? Because I read in an interview with you that, you know, you're not doing this literal interpretation of a place. It's, you know, channeling how you felt about it. So how does that creative process happen?
Yeah, I've been trying to deal with places for a while now, and a few of the first pieces I wrote were much more kind of data driven. And I would use sort of like when I wrote a long piece a few years ago that used sort of like rates of deforestation and, you know, population patterns and stuff, and try to, those would trigger different, you know, trends in the sounds. And I don't think it really rang true as much as if you're sort of working more abstractly. I guess a good example is the song I'm going to play next, which is called Abilene. It's also on the new CD. And I wrote this a couple years ago when I toured through Kansas for the first time. Kansas is flat, and I had expected that to be a very boring drive, you know, driving across West Kansas. But in fact, I found it really kind of unnerving and weird. I hope no one from Kansas is listening to this. But it's, you have no sense of where you are. You can't really position yourself in relation to what's around you. Everything is just, there's no landmarks. You can't tell how fast you're going. I found it very disorienting and kind of placeless and strange. So I wrote this song, Abilene, because Abilene was the name, the city on all the signs I kept passing, which, you know, allegedly the city was going to come at some point. I wrote this to kind of capture that sense of disorientation and discomfort. So it's a very cheerful little song.
Now we got to hear it. So when you play these songs, does it kind of bring you back to that place in your head? Or, you know?
Sometimes it does. At this point, they've just sort of become their own things. Mm-hmm. But it's very satisfying to me that, you know, that kind of essence is still there at the core of each one of these songs. And that I also acknowledge that they may not necessarily bring out the same, they might not remind every listener of the same kind of place, but I think it's more important that they just know that that was my process. And if I can kind of encourage them to, you know, if you might wonder what your Kansas song might be, you know, then I've done something useful somehow, you know.
Well, you've prepared me for something unnerving, so I'm
yeah, I know. I hope it lives up.
I'm looking forward to that now. Go ahead, Ben.
Right, this is called Abilene. Thank you.
That is Ben Cosgrove, live from Studio A with Abilene, inspired by Kansas. Well, I'm really glad that you explained your thought process behind that one, because it's fun to kind of think about that. Keep that in mind while listening to that particular tune.
Yeah, I think it sits pretty well next to, you know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow as, you know, iconic Kansas songs.
Yes, I think they might, you know, adopt it as a state song any minute now.
It was funny. I play that song. I always avoid telling that story when I play in Kansas, obviously, but I was playing a show in Nebraska, and I began that whole explanation I gave you about how weird I found flat places, and I realized halfway through, you know, what I was doing, but managed somehow to, like, walk it back and convince them that, you know, Nebraska was way different to us.
Way hillier.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not talking about you guys.
It's nice to be here safe in Duluth, where, you know, you guys have topography and
yes,
no
yes, there. Yes. And, you know, probably a lot of people in Kansas probably feel the same way that you do about it, to be honest.
I can only hope.
Another aspect of place that you have spent some time studying is the preservation of natural sound. In fact, you had a fellowship to work on that, right?
Yeah, that was a really, really cool thing. I was very lucky in that respect. I applied for this journalism fellowship from Middlebury College in Vermont, and they gave me this big pile of money to go out and research what different national parks do to kind of preserve or protect these, you know, amazing spaces from noise pollution. And I was really startled to learn how, I mean, you picture, you know, Yosemite or, you know, Denali or the Grand Canyon or one of those things. I mean, what you're doing is picturing them. You don't, like, I think we tend not to think much about what places sound like. And that struck me as sort of weird and even stranger that, you know, that it hadn't occurred to me before. And I guess it's something that wasn't able to be kind of monitored accurately until relatively recently, because you need, you know, also like all this kind of equipment, like what you've got here, you need that, but, you know, in the middle of the wilderness. So I was able to kind of tramp around through these amazing places with these sort of dedicated scientists. And I hiked out with this guy in Alaska to a mountaintop where he had a microphone mounted for a month, and it had like all these noises of sort of grizzly bears investigating it and that kind of thing. And it was really good. It was a good project for me, and it got me kind of thinking about sound in a very different way. And it made me, I think, a better listener, and it definitely changed my palette as a composer a lot. And I think on field studies, you'll hear a lot where I used just different sorts of silence. Like, there's a lot of ambient sound in there that I think I tried to avoid having dead space on the album, and rather the sort of background color of all of these songs changes sort of gradually as you move through the CD. Mm-hmm. So that was only a year, but it gave me kind of my first opportunity to kind of travel around. And to get between these places, that was kind of how I started touring. Because I thought, like, I need to get from, you know, Alaska to wherever. And I would just book shows every night and see if I could offset my gas. And then it turned out that that was a viable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pretty much haven't stopped doing that since then. So that whole year doing that project was very important to my life in general, I would say.
And part of that research is because some of those natural sounds are changing and going away with, you know, as civilization encroaches more and more. What did you learn about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is sort of the most depressing way to possibly put this is, well, in what I was saying earlier about kind of how important it is to have a sense of how all these places are different from each other, and how when you're in, say, Duluth, it feels very different from when you're in South Carolina, you know. And that's very easy to achieve visually most of the time. But sonically, I really found that, you know, a lot of these places, as different as they may be, sound increasingly alike, because we're sort of, a lot of the new sounds that are popping up in all these places are sort of, you know, airplanes and power lines and all these sort of drones. And they're very kind of, the word I'm looking for isn't coming to me, but they kind of flatten the whole soundscape, and they kind of hide all these distinctive noises behind this kind of gauzy veil. And I think that analogy was first told me by one of these scientists I was interviewing, and really kind of bummed me out for a month or two.
But, you know, those things fade. Luckily.
Right, exactly. So I just play the same music in all these different places and contribute to the process in that way.
There you go. There you go. And we alluded earlier to the fact that you are a multi-instrumentalist. You started with the piano, and you say that's kind of your home base,
yep.
really. But I was reading that, you know, as you were studying, you kind of would get interested in another instrument and in another one. And so are you pretty much comfortable on just about anything that you pick up, you know, with a little practice?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I can. I never really thought about it that way. I don't play any woodwinds.
Okay.
If that helps. I never tried saxophone or anything like that. I don't know. I think it's really less impressive than people say. I think because once you play, you know, trumpet, it's not a huge leap to the trombone. It's not a huge.
And you're probably not quite as proficient on those as you are on the piano, I would guess.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so for sure.
But you just are able to, you know, add.
Yeah, I think a very important force in my learning instruments is the realization that if I could get good enough to get paid for playing them, I could, you know. That was worth it. So in the years that I've been working as a full-time musician, I've definitely become much more proficient on a lot of these instruments. So I can kind of tour as a trumpet player or an accordion player or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I have a short attention span, but I really like kind of being able to wear a lot of different hats. And
is there something about the different voices of the instruments that kind of appeals to you?
Yo, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think, yeah, I don't know. Part of it is, I mean, I kind of learned them all for the environment of recording my own music. And so I guess a lot of it comes from just being a control freak where, you know, rather than find and hire an accordion player, I would just learn the accordion. You know?
Well, and you've been, and recording has been a love of yours for a long time.
Yeah, it sort of increasingly is that way. I don't know. I'm really... For a long time, I recorded primarily, and I thought of performing as sort of the secondary thing. And in recent years, obviously, that's changed. But most of my music is sort of written. I consider the ideal form of these pieces to be like what is on the record. And then I'm able to kind of play versions of them. But I'm always kind of pushing people towards, you know, this thing I've made that you can put in a CD player and listen to.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kind of music that you do, is it hard to find it? To fit it in places, you know what I mean? Because it seems like you're kind of touring and playing clubs and things. This is not the kind of music that you normally hear in spaces like that.
I don't know. It is and it isn't. It's hard to find places where they're... I mean, you almost never find some place that's looking exactly for what I'm doing because I don't even know what that would be. But it also fits... I don't know. I found that it fits in a lot of places you wouldn't expect. So I'm able to play a much more diverse array of venues than... I might be able to if I were a normal singer-songwriter or what have you. But certainly certain types of places work better than others for this sort of thing. But it's been weird. I've played in dive bars and I've played in, you know, museums, and it's been a really cool adventure.
And so how did the dive bars go?
Some of them went really well, actually.
It's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have time for one more. What do you want to finish up with here?
That's a great question. I can... this is a song from an earlier CD of mine, actually. This is called Nashua. It's on an album I made called Yankee Division. It's about the Nashua River, which begins in central Massachusetts and kind of winds up into New Hampshire. And in the town of Nashua, it joins the Merrimack and goes out to the ocean from there. And you should all come visit. It's very pretty. It's kind of the area in which I grew up. Thank you again for having me, though. This has been lots of fun.
That's Ben Cosgrove live from Studio A. Well, thank you so much, Ben.
Thank you for having me. This is really fun.
And just to remind people, you're playing tonight at Lake Avenue Restaurant in Duluth with local musician Mary Bew. Are you starting or is she?
I am starting, I believe.
Okay, and that's at 9 o'clock tonight at Lake Avenue in Canal Park there. Pleasure to have you, and I'm sure we'll see you again, either solo or with Saint Anyway.
Yeah,
or...
I'm here every couple of months, it turns out, so hope to see you soon.
Thanks a lot. Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with funding provided by our members. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Arts. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.